Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins on the local news roundup. A bombshell in the North Carolina governor's race. Mecklenburg County Commission joins Charlotte City Council voting in favor of a sales tax increase to support our transit plans. The proposal now heads to Raleigh. But the discussion over transit leads to a dust-up between two key members of the commission. They both accuse the other of being just like Trump. With polls tightening in key states, presidential candidates continue to crisscross the country and make visits to North Carolina. There's a new deadline for mail-in ballots to be sent out, and after a disastrous start to the season, the Panthers take the heat in the national sports press while also benching quarterback Bryce Young after saying they wouldn't. Here to talk about those stories and more is Steve Harrison, politics reporter for WFAE News. Nick Oxner's here. He's chief investigative reporter and executive producer of Investigations at WBTV. Alexandria Sands reports for Axios Charlotte. And Eric Spanberg is managing editor of the Charlotte Business Journal. Welcome to you all. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, mid-afternoon yesterday, at about 3:30 p.m. yesterday, CNN released a story headlined, "I'm a Black Nazi." It revolved around Mark Robinson, the Republican nominee for North Carolina governor, and a series of inflammatory comments he allegedly made on a pornography website's message board more than 10 years ago, in which he referred to himself as a Black Nazi, expressed support for reinstating slavery, and said he liked to watch transgender pornography. Further, CNN reports that many of his posts were gratuitously sexual and lewd, made between 2008 and 2012 on Nude Africa. That's the name of the site. The network said they were releasing only a small portion of Robinson's comments on the website because they were so graphic in nature. Of course, Robinson has denied this as the story was coming out. He actually denied it before it came out on his social media platform.
Well, guys, the news media is at it again. My opponent is at it again. You all have seen the half-truths and outright lies of Josh Stein on these ads over and over again. And now a story leaked by him to CNN is appearing now. Let me reassure you, the things that you will see in that story, those are not the words of Mark Robinson. You know my words, you know my character, and you know that I have been completely transparent in this race and before.
So this has been portrayed in the national media as a bombshell. Is it?
Yeah, it really is, even for Mark Robinson standards. I mean, this is, I think one of the reasons it's such a bombshell is because it is a high level, kind of large encapsulation of issues that had been swirling around anyways, right? We had seen previous scrutiny, well, not at this level, of anti-Semitic and anti-LGBT and transphobic remarks. We've seen other stories about, the one came out in the Assembly last month about his pervasive pornography habits in the early 2000s in Greensboro. And all of this is relevant, both not just the racist and anti-Semitic comments, but the transphobic comments and his preferences for what kind of pornography he watches, because he has made these repeated comments over the years as a candidate, as an office holder, and now as a candidate for governor, about family values, again, anti-LGBT, things that are, you know, racist comments. And so all of this is relevant. And I think this just puts all of these issues into one set of posts and one story.
Eric, I'll come to you in a second. Which is more damning? The fact that if these posts are, in fact, something that he wrote and posted himself, and there's good indication that it is, but he says it's not, which is more damning, that or the hypocrisy that is demonstrated by his public
position? I think it's all of it wrapped up in one Nude Africa bow. And I don't mean to make light of it, but I mean, I take the entire totality of where these comments were made, what he said, what was covered. And Mike, if you'll indulge me just 30 seconds, we should tell folks that CNN was able to trace these because he used a screen name on Nude Africa that he has used across the internet on social media sites. He put his full name in the bio, and there's even an email address listed for him that he had used, these comments, of course, we should also note, were made over a 5-year period, more than a decade ago.
Eric.
It was just interesting the way all of this played out yesterday. I mean, there, you mentioned that Lieutenant Governor Robinson had the video that he posted before the story even came out. All day on social media, there was just rampant speculation about what's in the story. There were bits and pieces of the story that were shared. There was speculation, Washington Post and others, about whether Robinson would take himself off the ballot and out of the race. And of course, the elephant in the room, to use a terrible pun with the Republican Party, is that this is so decisive potentially for the presidential election, 16 electoral votes. And there is much concern that if Mark Robinson, who is already trailing by 14 points in polls, if he loses and loses by a wide margin, he might bring Trump down, who is closer to Harris in North Carolina, and that could cost him the presidential election.
Steve.
Yeah, I think, you know, going back to what Eric said, it was interesting on all day Thursday as the story was kind of developing even before CNN released it. There were kind of indications that top Republicans were kind of hoping he was going to drop out because the deadline was midnight last night before the ballots went out. And there was even a quote, Richard Hudson, who's the chair of the National Republican Congressional Committee, gave a quote like, it was kind of one of those, what did he say? Like, I think he needs to give an explanation. Didn't condemn, but when you move into the realm of that person needs to explain themselves, that's a real sign that people are losing faith with you. So there was this kind of like movement building. And then when Robinson, what, about 3 p.m., he put out his own video and said he was staying in. And at that point, I feel like that kind of the Republican establishment gave up. I mean, they was, well, he's in. And everyone kind of, these are the cards we are going to have to play for the next 45 days.
I would imagine that by now, since this broke late yesterday afternoon and was all over the news nationally and locally beginning yesterday afternoon into the evening, that everybody knows some of the stuff that was posted allegedly on these websites. But just in case they don't, I'll mention a few of them here just so you'll know what we're talking about. And I can't mention them all because we would lose our FCC license if I mentioned some of them. And others are just too vile to put words to. But allegedly in one thread, he wrote, "Get that effing commie B word off the National Mall." And he was referring to the memorial to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in Washington. He also wrote, "I am not in the KKK. They don't let blacks join. If I was in the KKK, I would have called him Martin Lucifer Coon." CNN spoke to him on Thursday. He both denied the posts were his and steered the conversation toward Josh Stein, his opponent in the governor's race. And yesterday afternoon, Politico published a Mark Robinson email address that appeared on the website Ashley Madison, which is a website evidently for married people seeking affairs. Meanwhile, the Carolina Journal, which I believe is a conservative publication, reported that Josh Stein's campaign did indeed leak this story to CNN and the WRAL in Raleigh, and Robinson referred to that in his denial on social media.
And folks, we've seen this type of stuff in the past as well. Clarence Thomas famously once said he was the victim of a high-tech lynching. Well, it looks like Mark Robinson is too, by a man who refuses to stand on stage and debate me about the real issues that face you. Instead, they want to focus on salacious tabloid lies. We're not going to let them do that. We are staying in this race. We are in it to win it. And we know that with your help, we will. God bless you. And we will see you where? On the campaign trail.
Earlier on X, Robinson accused Josh Stein of hiding behind millions of dollars in dishonest TV ads funded by liberal billionaires and left-wing special interests to tear him down. And he challenged the attorney general to a debate.
Well, Josh Stein, you like to misconstrue my Facebook posts on television. You like to lie about the wonderful daycare center that my wife and I ran, one of the proudest moments of our life. But will you debate me on television? I suspect that you will not. Why?
because me and you on television will show the stark differences between Mark Robinson and Josh Stein, and you know that I'll come out on top. I've already agreed to the Spectrum debate. I've already given them multiple dates. You have not answered, and the reason you have not answered is because you don't want the people of North Carolina to see exactly how weak, cowardly, and quite frankly, what a liar you actually are. So I'm challenging you to a debate right now, Josh Stein. Come on down. Let's do this mano a mano, and let's get it done.
So again, that was prior to yesterday's news breaking about his participation in these websites. Certainly he is correct. There are stark differences between him and Josh Stein, politically and otherwise. But prior to yesterday's revelation, Stein, who is leading by as much as 14 points in the polls, I think 51-37% is the latest figure I saw, declined to debate Robinson. Why?
Well, he doesn't have to. And we're in an era where increasingly debates aren't necessary. I mean, the concept of a gubernatorial race where they're not going to debate once is crazy, right? If you told someone that even 10 years ago, they'd say there's no way. But we live in an era where people don't have to. I mean, you know, we might be done with presidential debates. It's still September. And I think, you know, when you're up by that much, why do a thing if you don't have to do it?
Eric? And Robinson, I was just going to say, and Robinson, going back to the primary, you know, he's talking about how people need, you know, mano on mano with the stage and need to get up there and debate. He refused to debate his Republican opponents before the March primary. So, you know, it is what it is.
Eric?
I want to go back to a point Nick made earlier. What I think is really interesting about all this is, given the last decade, it is so difficult to shock anyone at this point with what goes on in our political world. And a lot of people yesterday responded to that story other than with shock and horror. It was a faction of people saying, hey, look, this is who this guy is. We've seen stories similar to this throughout this campaign and throughout his political life. But I think what's most interesting is the way that Nick put it, which is that this is such an overwhelming bombshell of a story that it's much likelier to pierce the worldview of people who just don't care about politics, who don't pay attention to any of this, who don't know about the assembly story, which was all of 2 weeks ago, feels like it was 20 years ago. So I think that's the thing to watch with this story is, you know, how much life it has, how sustained it is, and whether it breaks through to the broader population that doesn't really care about politics.
Well, and it was in the A block of like all the evening newscasts last night at the network level, right? It was on CNN. Yeah. All night last night, everyone's talking about it, and I think this one is going to appear. And it, you know, is coming in late September when people are starting to pay attention again. You know, in the run up to the November election. So, you know, the timing and the substance combined for this to be pretty potent.
Yeah, I mean, Republicans have known who this guy is. It's no secret. His statements are all out there on the internet. They've been broadcast on radio and television for months. They've been printed in newspapers, etc. They've been on websites, so they knew who he was. And before this story broke yesterday, there were reports that the National Republican Party and the Trump campaign had been working furiously behind the scenes to get him to drop out of this race. Clearly, he didn't do that. And the Republican Party in North Carolina has issued this statement. Mark Robinson has categorically denied the allegations made by CNN, but that won't stop the left from trying to demonize him via personal attacks. The left needs this election to be a personality contest, not a policy contest, because if voters are focused on policy, Republicans win on Election Day. Democrats have, this, once again, this is from the Republican Party in North Carolina, Democrats have no answers on the record-setting inflation and the open border policies that have both defined Vice President Harris's tenure in the White House and have decimated family budgets across North Carolina. The left can try to smear Robinson all they want, but when voters go to the polls on Election Day, they're going to be asking one simple question: are you better off than you were 4 years ago? The answer is overwhelmingly no, and that is why Republicans will win on November the 5th. We'll talk more about that when we come back. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte. Using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks and the local news roundup on 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org, listener-funded. Steve Harrison is with us. He's our political reporter at WFAE News. Nick Oxner's chief investigative reporter for WBTV. Alexandria Sands, reporter for Axios Charlotte. And Eric Spanberg, managing editor of the Charlotte Business Journal. So I just read the entire North Carolina GOP statement on Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson and the story that broke yesterday, alleging that he had made these vile, racist, homophobic, anti-trans, etc. posts on a porn website, which
not
he denies.
Correct you, Mike, they're arguably pro-trans.
Okay, yes, but the statements he made on the website are pro-trans, which contradict his statements publicly, and that's part of what this whole thing is about. So they're talking about in this statement, they're throwing it off on Democrats being leftist. This would have been, in another universe, not so far away and not so long ago, absolutely, completely, unquestionably disqualifying. And yet he's in the race. They didn't force him out. What does this say about how far our standards have fallen and how far the bar has been lowered?
Well, listen to the statement, though, right, that says Robinson says it's not true. Let's pivot and talk about Republican ideals. It was really a don't pay attention to the actual story because Robinson says it's false. By the way, the number one explanation Robinson offers is that this is generated by AI, which.
But Mike, to your point, Mike, I think you can draw a pretty straight line to the Access Hollywood tape and the fact that that did not end that campaign that year.
How do you explain how do you explain it?
When that came out, I can't really explain it other than to say that the new way of devastating or potentially devastating news and revelations is to simply deny, 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 and fight, and keep talking back against the story. Politicians used to pretty quickly fold up a campaign and say, all right, it's over, and they just don't do that anymore.
I would say that Robinson is not Donald Trump. He's not as Teflon as Trump. And the party can't physically force him off the ballot, one, because now we're out of time. Even had he withdrawn yesterday, it would have been a mess because of what already happened with RFK Jr. in the ballot and having to reprint. So just functionally, it just wasn't possible. That being said, there are a lot of people in this state who yesterday, the day before, certainly today, really wish he weren't the Republican nominee for governor. They won't say that publicly. And so that's why you see statements that say, well, he's denied it. Let's talk about how bad Josh Stein is, which you can still think Josh Stein is bad as a Republican, even if you're privately going to just hold your nose and vote for your guy.
That is a difference. Go ahead, Steve.
I was going to say, I think, Eric, you talked about the Access Hollywood tape, and there's been this speculation that how much this will impact, Donald Trump at the top of the ballot. And I think, in a way, Trump is his own brand. I mean, he survived mm-hmm. Access Hollywood. I'm not sure how much Mark Robinson will pull him down. I think the big risk are for the other Council of State Republican mm-hmm. candidates who people don't know a lot about them. And Democrats, I think, will be working furiously to tie them to Mark Robinson. We're already seeing that. Jeff Jackson put out a pretty good video or effective video, linking his opponent in the attorney general's race, Dan Bishop, to his wholehearted endorsement of Robinson, interspliced with clips from the CNN stories. I think that's the danger for Republicans, is that these other candidates who aren't Trump are going to have a harder time getting away from this.
And if I'm not mistaken, and as the stories are accurate, the Trump campaign has already begun to distance, even before this announcement came out, they began to distance themselves from Robinson. He had been slated to speak at a Vance rally that you attended, Nick, on Wednesday. He didn't because he said he had COVID. He withdrew because Robinson said he had COVID. Clearly, he was told not to be there. He told CNN yesterday, Robinson, that he's not getting out of the race. He said, quote, there are people who are counting on us to win. He's already behind in the polls to Josh Stein before this came out. Is he kidding himself? Is this race over for him?
It would be a political comeback for the ages if he won. And that was before yesterday. I think when you talk to Democrats around the state, they all privately say, look, it's not going to be a 13-point race in November. It might be 3, it might be 4, it might be 5 points. But, I mean, you know, a double-digit deficit at this stage is nearly insurmountable. And I think that is also the reason why the Trump campaign had already started distancing itself from Robinson. I mean, we all know Trump ultimately is about results. And if you're a winner, he likes you. If you're not, he doesn't. The last time I saw Mark Robinson with Donald Trump at a rally in Randolph County last month, Robinson didn't get up and speak. Trump called him up on stage for a picture with sheriffs where Trump said, you know, thank goodness Mark, quote, and this is a quote, thank goodness Mark lost all that weight, otherwise the stage might collapse, which is not a ringing endorsement of you as a gubernatorial candidate.
Plus the fact, given that Trump called him Martin Luther King Jr. on steroids, when you compare that comment to the comment that Mark Robinson himself allegedly made on this website about Martin Luther King, you wouldn't want to be called Martin Luther King on steroids. If this race is not over, Alex, you've been reporting that Robinson has been dancing all around his stand on abortion in recent weeks, and you say he has laid out his goals as governor. One thing he told those attending a small business luncheon recently was not to expect him to go into office and be some wily, crazy culture warrior. Is he soft pedaling?
Mark Robinson was on the defense for a lot of that visit, and I'm sure he's going to be on the defense for the rest of his campaign. He was talking about taking questions about the comment he made about skirts. A woman should just keep his skirt down, their skirts down. And one thing that he said when he was asked about that is he said, "Well, they cut off the part where I said keep your pants up." I thought it was interesting in the CNN article, when they were having a discussion in the message boards about rape, and he said, this is why you don't essentially do it with a white woman, because they will point the blame on you. I think this kind of shows what people are saying when the Democrats are saying, this is the character we know. How can you still defend? Like, that's showing that that's what you meant by that. That's what you intended to say. But I think a lot of these comments are aligning with the things that he's been defending himself against.
And yet in your reporting, which preceded yesterday's revelations from CNN, you said that he was out on the stump talking about things like raising teacher pay, modernizing the DMV, boosting the economy by addressing what he called the pillars on which it stands: public safety, public education, healthcare, infrastructure, and housing. Has he switched parties?
I did think the public education, he's focused a lot on that. He was very adamant that he was for public education, but he didn't speak at all. I wish he had about...
Has he spoken to the legislature about that?
He didn't speak about private school tuition vouchers when we were there, and I wish he would have. I would have liked to know how those two things align.
Okay. Well, I think we spent a lot of time... Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to make one final point. I agree with Steve that Donald Trump is his own brand. I think what will be interesting here these next few weeks is the way that the Harris-Waltz campaign pairs Robinson and Trump together, which, you know, is they'd already started doing it yesterday. So how does that play out? Does that change anybody's mind? I don't know, but we're going to see a lot of it.
Meanwhile, something else happened this week. Mecklenburg County Commission followed in the footsteps of Charlotte City Council and voted in favor of asking for a 1 cent sales tax for transit. This would fund the Red Line, for which City Council just spent $91 million to buy the tracks to run it on, and other aspects of our transit plan. But Steve, do we have a plan? I mean, this was a foregone conclusion, was it not, that they'd vote yes on this?
Yes, they were going to vote yes. I think it was interesting that the vote was 6-3, so there were some no votes in this decision. And the main reason for the conflict comes back to the whole issue of the Silver Line going to Matthews. Matthews is upset. Matthews is trying to kind of tweak the plan somehow to still get the train or the train to get closer. And you heard that at the county commission meeting when Pat Cotham, Laura Meyer, and Susan Rodriguez McDowell voted no. I think of all of the municipalities, all of the governments that have voted no, only 4 elected officials voted no on this. 3 came from the county.
So to be clear, this vote on this week on county commission was to ask the legislature for permission to put a 1 cent sales tax referendum on the ballot in November of 2025. If Raleigh says yes, the commission will vote again on whether to actually move ahead with putting that referendum on the ballot. I suppose city council would also have to vote again, but because of the parameters placed on the original plan by legislative leaders who said that our plan at the time was too centered on rail, it was altered to become more road-centric. And in the process, it seems unlikely, as you mentioned, Steve, that the Silver Line will go to Matthews, and that resulted in Matthews Town Commission voting no several weeks ago on this plan and for Matthews Mayor John Higdon to call for a transportation summit. Mecklenburg County Commissioner Lee Altman was dismissive of that idea.
But this transportation summit is a little bit of a political stunt.
Is it?
When I talked to the Matthews mayor a few months ago about this, he had mentioned that he was very hopeful that they could have a discussion and they had time before the General Assembly would be able to take this up or would be willing to take this up, that they would have time to reassess this 40-40-20 split. So I do think that he was genuinely hopeful that he could maybe get a better deal for Matthews before state lawmakers actually looked at it.
Eric?
This one is really interesting. So throughout this and each of those votes that Steve was talking about, and including this week, George Dunlap, the chair, and others have said, look, we're just voting to ask the legislature for permission to hold a referendum. This is not deciding projects other than the red line. It's not deciding anything. It's just giving the voters a chance to vote on a 1 cent tax increase. Well, in the discussion, one of the commissioners asked Dina DiOrio, the county manager, point blank, can the 40-40-20 change? And she said, no, it really can't change because that was the sentiment we got from state lawmakers.
So the 40-40-20 that you referred to is the state lawmakers said change the plan, make it road-centric, and so they changed the plan essentially to be 40% of the money going for roads, 40% of the money going to rail, 20% going to other forms of transportation, including buses. But that's not really written down. Even though you said, Dina DiOrio said, we can't change the ratio, it's not written down. And even Lee Altman said, we don't really have a plan.
We will engage in a thorough and searching revamp of the transit plan. And that will be the opportunity for us to have the kind of input that I think the mayor of Matthews is envisioning. We don't have a plan now.
So how will the legislature view this request for a tax increase referendum if we don't have a plan?
Well, Mike, we have a concept of a plan.
Yeah, that's
Thank
right.
You. Thank you, Donald.
And remember the way that this is presented. There's a 30-page draft bill that they crafted, that the county and town managers put together, written in the form of a bill. Obviously in the hopes that the legislature will take it and say yes, and here's your referendum. Now, of course, the legislature can change and often does change whatever it receives, but that 40-40-20 formula is part of that. And the county manager made it clear that the reason that was even discussed, or the reason that that has been sort of laid down as the markers, that's what they have been told state lawmakers are willing to do. So it is highly, highly, highly unlikely that that ratio is going to change or change much.
I think, though, with the ratio, you can't, to Eric's point, you can't go back to 80% for roads or 90% for roads. That's not going to happen. But what about instead of 40-40-20 saying 45% for roads, 45% for rail, and then 10% for buses? Those are the kind of changes that I think are realistic. And the county and the city, they're just kind of saying like, no, we can't do that. Everything's set in stone. It's not set in stone. And that's what the mayor of Matthews is trying to get people to talk about.
He wants a 45-45-10 split that you mentioned there. But would that still provide enough money to run the Silver Line to Matthews?
No, 45 for rail is not enough to get it to Matthews. Well, the point would be you would build the Silver Line as far as you can go to, like, say, East Charlotte, Idlewild Road. That doesn't get it to Matthews, but it at least gets it started. And then maybe in the next generation of transit expansion, it does get to Matthews. But if you have no train at all, you'd have 0 miles, you're really far away.
Eric. Mike, the other part is you're asking about the plan. So beyond the sort of draft legislation, the 40-40-20 ratio that we're talking about, as far as the projects, what they cost, what the priorities may be, what Commissioner Altman is saying is that between January and July of next year, CATS and the Metropolitan Transit Commission are going to revamp the 2030 transit plan. In other words, update all of that, hold public meetings, get input from, you know, the various constituencies, and then approve that next summer, present that to the public, obviously, in its final version, leading into the referendum in November of 2025. So I think her point was that a transportation summit is not needed because they're about to go through this whole process for 6 months next year.
So there were three no votes on county commission. Laura Meyer, Susan Rodriguez McDowell, and Pat Cotham voting against. Laura Meyer had made a motion to delay the vote until officials held that transit summit that John Higdon wants. And Pat Cotham ended up voting no because she didn't feel the commission was ready to make this decision.
I certainly want to slow this down because there's a lot to talk about. And we haven't been included in this. And I resent that.
This is a big vote. It was 6-3 on commission, 10-1 on city council. The fact that it wasn't unanimous on either body, what should that tell us?
I think these boards, even the people who voted for it, especially on the city council, voted for it because they realized they kind of needed to if they wanted to get this done in any way or move it forward. But they weren't thrilled at how quickly, you know, we got to do this again right now, which we hear all the time from staff, both at the city and county level. And I think we've seen from local elected officials, once again, some questions, maybe a little reluctance on why does this feel like it's popping up? Who made the plan? Is it fully baked? You know, even as you're saying, we got to do it right now or time's going to pass. It just feels like a recurring theme.
It's always, Nick, to your point, whenever there's a tough issue, whether it's the stadium or transit, it's always, we can't wait. We have to vote now. If we somehow wait, nothing, everything will blow up. I mean, well, that's the message we always get.
It seems to drag on for years and then suddenly we have to do it right now. And some city council members are concerned about the lack of transparency during negotiations and over this new governance model, which would create a whole new body to run transit. From Pat Cotham's comments, it seems there may be a similar sentiment on commission, at least about rushing into this. It's hard to imagine, after all these years of discussing this, that we are moving too fast. But are we? In 20 seconds or less?
Made a pretty good point during the meeting when she was talking about how, like, if we were all at the table about with this issue, it would be pretty chaotic. So the fact that the managers were kind of doing it by themselves behind closed door, it does make sense.
And there was a kerfuffle on commission during this discussion, which we'll get into when we come back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. We're here with Steve Harrison, WFAE's political reporter, Nick Oxner, chief investigative reporter for WBTV. Eric Spanberg is managing editor of the Charlotte Business Journal, and Alexandria Sands reports for Axios Charlotte. We've been talking about this commission vote on transit and sending the proposal to Raleigh for a 1 cent sales tax for transit. And during that transit discussion, Mecklenburg Commissioners Vilma Leek and George Dunlop got into a heated exchange. During that exchange, Leek called out the commission chair.
I'm sick and tired of it, George. And this is all you've done during these 2 years. You orchestrated to get me off the board.
So to what is she referring? What provoked this exchange? Has this been an ongoing problem working together?
I'd say it's been an ongoing problem, but it has never reared its head like it did on Tuesday. What caused it? It was a really pretty minor thing. They were going around the dais talking about the transit plan. Commissioner Leek thought she was entitled to speak next, and Commissioner Dunlap instead called on Pat Cotham, I believe is what happened. This was really kind of a minor thing. But again, there's so much under the surface that this blew up. And then when it was Commissioner Leek's turn to talk, she went on for about 2.5 minutes, just unloading on the chair.
Yeah. Once the dam broke, the words flew.
So what you've shown tonight, the very thing that people said, you're no good. You've done nothing but tried to embarrass me, saying I was too old to sit up here and I should go home. You don't know anything. You don't do anything.
Has he said she's too old to be on the board, Steve?
I have not heard that. I've never heard that in a public setting, perhaps privately. I don't know. Yeah, so that's new to me.
She had some more things to say, but ended up pointing out that she has gotten more votes than George Dunlap ever received. All things considered, I guess, all things considered, Dunlap responded relatively calmly.
You done?
I hope you're done.
All right. Donald Trump, if I ever heard it.
You John, right. You're Trump.
Mr.
A black Trump.
Wow. Since they invoked his name, would this kind of exchange have happened in local politics before 2016? You've been covering it a long time, Steve.
Yeah.
I've never heard anything quite like that, but I'm not sure it was that the former president was the catalyst to set that off. I don't know. Hard to say.
An investigation into the disappearance in February of 2000 of Aisha Degree was renewed last week, and a bevy of law enforcement descended on several properties in Cleveland County, including an assisted living facility, a home, even a house in Charlotte, I believe. Aisha was 9 years old at the time of her disappearance, and a new search warrant of affidavits were issued and obtained now by the media. What do they reveal, Nick?
Yeah, I think the biggest top line takeaway, well, there are several, but I think the most important here is that for the first time, law enforcement said in these affidavits, they believe Aisha was the victim of a homicide. So they believe Aisha's dead. They believe her body was concealed. And that is in part what they were searching for as they executed those warrants. The other takeaway is they have named now suspects in what they believe to be, according to these affidavits, her death and disappearance. And that's, again, the properties that they were searching. This is all made possible because of new technology that allowed them to pull DNA and use physical evidence to try to help solve this case.
Will they continue, now that they've deemed this a probable homicide, will they continue their investigation? Will they continue to look for any remains if that is, in fact, what they would find?
Yeah, they spent 2 days executing these search warrants, the bulk of which centered on a 40-acre tract of property in Shelby off Cherryville Road that had several houses on it and a lot of woods. They recovered a green car, which the FBI first said in 2016 it was looking for as a vehicle that Aisha was seen getting into. And so, you know, now they got to process all that. They got to, you know, do all the DNA processing and analyzing, comparing. And, you know, this is the biggest break in this case in nearly a quarter of a century. So I think folks are cautiously optimistic that this could lead to this case finally being solved once and for all.
So polls across the country are tightening in the presidential race, including in some key swing states. North Carolina was recently moved from leans Republican to toss-up. WRAL-TV's poll has Harris and Trump in a statistical tie, but with Harris slightly ahead. And both campaigns really want our 16 electoral votes. So they're coming here a lot. Trump and J.D. Vance were here, I think, this week in various parts of the state. Kamala Harris was here last week. Tim Walz was in Asheville this week. Do these whistle-stop tours make a difference in the 21st century? Do they change minds? Does kissing babies and shaking hands and eating barbecue help?
Well, I haven't seen anyone eat barbecue this cycle, at least not in all
donuts.
Somewhat
times have changed.
Yeah, somewhat surprised. Even Hillary Clinton stopped at Midwood Smokehouse after a campaign event here. Mike, I think what these do is a couple things. Is they help, one, get earned media coverage, which can be invaluable, right? Every time Kamala Harris or Donald Trump come, everyone's there. Trust me, because I'm at all the rallies now. and on all sides. And so one, it gets you that surge of earned media, which is invaluable, in addition to all the paid media you're blinking the airwaves with. But two, it energizes people and mobilizes people to go out and maybe lock you in. If you're coming to a campaign event, you're even more likely to go show up to vote to the polls, because when you have polling this tight.
But aren't they already locked in? The people who come to those rallies, aren't they already locked into those candidates?
No. In fact, I'll tell you, I was at the Vance rally in Raleigh on Wednesday, and because the media work area was microscopic, ended up sitting on a couch outside of the media workspace, and a husband and wife came and sat down next to me, and they said, "Oh, this is the first time we've ever been to anything like this." And that's a perfect example of why these events happen, because at these events, what you see is messages, you know, text here or scan this QR code to get your early voting plan and get some friends to the polls and come knock on doors. These are really activation events. And that is hugely important, Mike, because essentially the winner in the presidential contest of North Carolina this year is going to come down to turnout and enthusiasm. Right. And so, if you can jack those up, you can win.
So you've been this week alone to the Tim Walz event, and then you went to the J.D. Vance event the next day. How would you compare the atmosphere, the size of the crowd, what was said at those events?
Yeah, I would actually say they were both well attended. The Tim Walz event was outside in Asheville in the rain, and it would have been a lovely venue had it not been raining. And yet that was a full crowd. It was a very large crowd. At an outdoor venue in Asheville. So I thought that was notable. But then equally the next day in Raleigh, at what was probably a smaller venue, we were in the kind of gathering space of the big train station in Raleigh. You know, it was crowded, it was full, and that was an event in the middle of a Wednesday. And so, you know, again, it's people who think that they are, you know, aligned with this campaign that are showing up, and it's not so much recruiting new voters as energizing the supporters that you have.
On this Friday, we are still, go ahead, Steve.
I was just going to say to what Nick said, talking about, you know, energizing voters, you know, when Harris had that rally at Bojangles a week or two ago, you know, one of the things that the campaign does is, you know, you sign up for a ticket with your phone number and an email. They are harvesting that information. They are going to be contacting you repeatedly to try and get you. Not just to vote, but to go and canvass to get other people to vote. You know, so it's this part of this whole operation that they're building to try and get that one person to then turn out three or four.
So we are still on this Friday, 46 days away from Election Day, but early voting starts very soon. And in fact, the mail-in ballots are supposed to be mailed out today in North Carolina. Meanwhile, Jennifer Rubin, who is a liberal columnist, wrote an opinion piece in the Washington Post. And she says, if Trump loses North Carolina, it could be an early night on election night and curtains for the GOP. That would indicate that she believes this state is pivotal in this race. Are we? Or would other states like Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Nevada, Arizona have to fall in line for us to be an important piece of this?
That's not really hyperbole, Mike. I mean, North Carolina is must win for the Trump campaign and his path to getting enough electoral votes to win. It's a nice to win for the Harris campaign. And obviously, if they win, then that would take it out of the Trump column. And that's why you see, you know, Harris was here Thursday making two stops. It was the first two stops after her debate performance on Tuesday night last week. That's why you see Trump here on Saturday and both the VP candidates here this week as well. And so it is not an overstatement, and we are razor thin in terms of the margin here, with Harris typically and now repeatedly up by about a point, but well within the margin of error in just about every poll.
So I want to go back to Mark Robinson for just a second. Nick, for months, Robinson has ignored requests to amend forms filed with the North Carolina Ethics Commission to include information he omitted in his 2024 filing. And WBTV has been looking into this. What is this all about? What did he allegedly omit?
Well, it's not allegedly, because he amended his filings to include them. One kind of minor thing is he only filed as a candidate for governor when he submitted his form in January, not his current jobs, which are lieutenant governor, and by virtue of being lieutenant governor, his seat on the State Board of Education. All that matters, though, especially his seat on the State Board of Education, because his wife as has been reported previously, sits on the board of several charter schools, which are ultimately regulated and overseen by the State Board of Education. And so he checked yes to question 8 on the form that he had, he or family were involved with organizations that were governed by the state, but then he didn't include those details. And it's worth noting that Mark Robinson filed an amended SEI in October of last year after I did a story that also found he had failed to disclose his wife's service on these charter school boards that, again, was regulated even more closely at that time by the State Board of Education on which he sat.
Steve, North Carolina State Supreme Court Justice Allison Riggs, a Democrat, has released a new campaign commercial in which she says she will protect abortion rights. And the reaction from Republicans has been what you might expect, that she has crossed the line. Would that be a fair criticism?
She's definitely coming right up to the line. The judicial in North Carolina, the judicial code of conduct, judges are not supposed to talk about impending cases or even kind of general theme, like broad issues. And so in her commercial, she talks, like you said, about protecting abortion rights. She goes a little farther and talks about Mark Robinson wants a total ban. She will fight for us. So I think the key is that the Democrats nationwide in judicial races have had some success talking very specifically about abortion, and that's what she's trying to do.
Well, here's a bit of her ad.
At 43, I'm the youngest woman to serve on the state Supreme Court and the only serving during my childbearing years. As women, we should be in charge of our own reproductive health care, but our rights are at risk. Mark Robinson says he wants to ban abortion with no exceptions, and my opponent could decide if his ban becomes law. I'll fight for your rights, protecting families like mine and yours.
So again, Allison Riggs is running again to be reelected to the state Supreme Court, and the state's code of judicial conduct says judges should, quote, abstain from public comment about the merits of pending proceedings. She told you, Steve, last year that she planned to talk about abortion rights in a way that did not violate that code of conduct. The stakes are high here because if she loses this election, there will only be one Democrat on an already Republican majority Supreme Court. So will this ad help or hurt her?
I think it will definitely help because, like I said, there have been other instances nationwide post-Dobbs in which women have run for state Supreme Court seats and have really talked about abortion and leaned into it. Wisconsin was one example. So I think politically, it's probably her best play. And, you know, Republicans feel like she's violating the code. Now, the flip side is that Democrats feel the Republican court has repeatedly violated the judicial code, you know, with Phil Berger's son on the court not recusing himself. There are many other instances. So again, kind of an escalation or a retaliation for what some Democrats feel is kind of a lawless court, maybe.
Very quickly, Eric, I think it was reported this morning in the Observer that our airport got some pretty low rankings in terms of customer satisfaction this year. I think we're 15th or 16th of all the busiest airports in the country, and people are not happy. But the never-ending construction is playing a role in that at Charlotte Airport. But they reached the touch point this week with a new section of the airport opening. Very quickly, talk about this expansion of Concourse A.
10 more gates. That moves Charlotte Douglas up to 124 gates. And this all ties in to the other story you mentioned, which is this rapid growth. This is one of the 10 busiest airports in the country, and the number of flyers is going up 13% this year. That and construction, you can see why people are frustrated, and they're dealing with a lot out there, as we have chronicled.
As we all know, the Panthers lost another game on Sunday, and ever since, they have been the subject of blistering criticism, both in the local sports media and in the national media as well. Just how bad has it been?
Pretty bad. They have lost by a combined score of 73-13 the first 2 weeks, but I think even more so than that, the criticism stems from the benching of Bryce Young after the game Sunday. Dave Canales said he's absolutely the quarterback. A day later, he was no longer the quarterback, and a lot of people are saying the Panthers have not given him enough time to develop.
Yeah, one day after the game, new Panthers head coach Dave Canales said he would not bench Bryce Young, and then the next day, he changed his mind.
This is something after I watched the film, I looked at it, had a thought, started working on talking to the guys that we make decisions with. certainly a lot of parties involved there. And ultimately, this comes on me. And my number one responsibility is to help the Panthers win. And so this move, I believe, puts us in a best chance to do that this week.
So the national press has been saying it's not Bryce Young's fault. It's all these coaching changes. It's David Tepper. I'm not sure where the blame lies, but where do you see this heading, Mr. Football?
We're headed to Las Vegas with a new quarterback, the Red Rifle, Andy Dalton. So 36 years old. Good luck.
Okay, Eric Spanberg, managing editor of the Charlotte Business Journal, Alex Sands, reporter for Axios Charlotte, Nick Oxner from WBTV, and Steve Harrison, our political reporter here at WFAE News. We just scratched the surface. It's been a busy week. Thanks for the hour.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.